to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, this is Joanna Penn from The Creative Pen, and today I'm interviewing Graham Storrs. Graham is the author of Time Splash, a fast-paced science fiction novel, as well as a number of other books. Graham lives in rural Queensland in Australia, so we are almost neighbours. welcome, Graham.
Hello there. Hi, Joanne.
Yeah, it's great to have you on here. So maybe you could start by telling us a bit about you and about your book.
Yes, well, thanks for having me. About me, I started life as a Brit, a Yorkshireman, actually. And studied psychology for years, did university research in artificial intelligence and human-computer interaction. Then I joined a big computer company and did more research in their R&D center in Cambridge for quite a long while. Went on doing research until I basically got too old to be cheap anymore and they had to make me a manager. So I started managing a department, moved to Zurich in Switzerland, where I ran a division there, which was quite fun. Lived there for a while and then went to Sydney, still with the same company, the same job. Ran the Asia Pacific Multimedia Center for IBM when I changed positions. And IBM then moved me up to Brisbane, more e-business, as it was called in those days. And I finally washed up here on top of a mountain in the middle of a forest in rural Queensland, which is very beautiful, I must say. We're having gorgeous sunny days at the moment. And I tend to sit outside in the garden and write when I can. Because I'm surrounded by forest and lorikeets and parrots and stuff. And,
it's beautiful.
People back home just do not understand how lovely it is here sometimes.
That's true. And tell us a bit about Time Splash.
Time Splash is like my eighth or ninth novel, but it was the first one that attracted any interest from publishers. Actually, not quite the first one that attracted interest, but the first one that attracted serious interest and sold just over a year ago now and came out in February. It's a sci-fi thriller. Yes, it's set 40 or 50 years into the future, and it's about a subculture, a youth subculture that involves traveling backwards in time to create very weird, trippy, acausal excitement, and they can all have a big party around it. And then, as always happens, somebody takes it too far and people start dying, and it gets clamped down on by the governments and the law and goes underground and eventually turns into this terrible terrorist weapon that people who are not the Time Splashers are exploiting by funding them. And it's about a couple of people, young people, who are damaged by this subculture who are very keen to try and stop this particular guy called Sniper, who is the sort of king of the Time Splashers, and he's going to destroy London. Mm. So everyone's running around and shouting and trying to stop each other doing terrible things. Meanwhile, the protagonists are falling in love in a very quirky kind of way. I had a lot of fun writing. It was the first time I'd ever written that kind of fast-paced thriller. And I've done another one since, and that was fun too. So maybe I found my métier.
Yeah, and I've read the book. It was excellent. I really enjoyed reading it, and because I like fast-paced thrillers, that's what I enjoy. I'm trying to write one myself. But I'm interested that's your ninth novel. So, and you said it's the first time you wrote a fast-paced thriller. So, do you think that's why it sold, as opposed to previous books?
It might have been more sort of commercial than other things. I mean, I've written space opera in the past. Huge, great, thick slabs of space opera. Mm. And, you know, the books were like 160,000 words each in a series. So that's very large to try and sell as a first novel. I've also written comedy. I wrote a sci-fi comedy set in Brisbane where an alien invasion happens, which involved a lot of strange things. And that, I think, is one of my favorite books. But again, sci-fi comedy is just not the kind of thing that sells well. You know, you can't interest agents and publishers in that because, although for a while everyone was looking for the new Douglas Adams, I think they've given up looking for him now.
No, that's true.
So it was a much more commercial book, I think, and it's probably something new authors ought to bear in mind that, you know, the publishers are looking to sell lots of books and, you know, commercial stuff is really where you are going to get the least resistance from a publisher.
So tell us a bit about your publishing journey. So, you know, how did you get a publishing deal, and are you going to look at self-publishing for those other books?
Well, good question. I've actually got loads of publications. When I was much younger, I actually supported myself through uni by writing articles, mostly on programming for computer magazines, which is very lucrative. I mean, you can, you know, feed yourself quite happily writing an article a week for a computer magazine. But I then sold the idea for some children's science books to Macmillan and did a couple for Wayland, some educational wall charts. I did the computer entries for the Hutchinson Encyclopedia, all kinds of freelance writing jobs I did when I was at uni and just beyond to make money. But until Time Clash came along, I'd never actually published any fiction. Although I've always been writing it ever since I was a small child. Even before I could write, I used to tell my poor, long-suffering sister long, elaborate stories. Anyone who would listen, really. But I always thought I should be writing loads and loads of stories and novels in my life, and always thought I ought to just, like, send them off to publishers is, you know, how I thought of it. And I did do that, and I think it must have made publishers cringe how sort of amateurish I was about this. Sounds stupid, really, but I didn't know what was expected. I didn't even do things right, like get the formatting right for the submissions. The query letters must have been a joke around the publisher's office. I would get, you know, be sort of silly, chatty, and, you know, trying to be humorous and all that kind of thing. And at that time, in my defense, you know, the web wasn't really around, and I couldn't find these things out as easily as you can now. I got so disillusioned with trying to be published and being rejected or just being ignored mostly. And I gave up on it. And for years, like a decade, I just wrote for fun. And that's how I accumulated a number of novels. I just writing for fun. Then I met someone who mentioned someone who was starting up as an agent. And I said, okay, I'll send them a manuscript. Turns out they'd already given up agenting by the time they got my contact. But they said, why don't I enter this particular competition that Hachette was running? So I did. And I won a place on a manuscript development retreat. And there I met publishers and agents and other successful writers. And it just opened my eye about what publishing was all about. I finally sort of understood what the business was and, you know, what they were looking for and so on. And that was almost exactly 2 years ago. And since then, I've published a dozen short stories and my first novel. And, you know, sort of feeling confident now that I sort of know what this is about and what they want. And it's very curious because absolutely zero publication of fiction before then. And, you know, just about anything I send out these days, I can eventually get it published now. And I think there's two things I've learned from that. One is that it's only by talking to people that I actually heard of the way in. You know, I learned about this contest. I learned about how publishing works. People there gave me advice on how to approach submission. And, you know, it worked. And it came from networking and people think networking is some kind of dirty word outside of marketing, as if people are just sort of using one another to get ahead. Mm. But it doesn't have to be anything like that. Networking is just talking to people, people with the same kind of interests. And if you do that, you'll learn interesting things, and some of them will be useful as well. Mm. And hopefully the people you're talking to will learn things from you. And that's really all it's about. And what I did learn was, if you network with other writers and with publishers and agents, you know, you will find out what to do and how best to target your efforts. And the other thing that I learned was becoming published was all a matter of mindset for me. Mm. I just had a useless, inaccurate picture of what the publishing industry was about and what publishers need from authors. Once I'd met a couple of real insiders and heard how they talk about their business, I could see what needed doing. Interestingly, I discovered afterwards, because this was only a couple of years ago, the information is all out there on the web, and you know it's absolutely saturated with good advice. But I still needed to hear it from real people before it really made sense. Mm. Of course, that might just be because I'm dumber than most people.
No, I think everything you've said there is absolutely fantastic. And I think, you know, the first thing you said is pretty much that you decided to take it seriously and you had all of this writing, but you'd never actually taken it seriously enough to find out about it. And then once you actually found out what you needed to do, you were successful. It was as easy as that.
Yes, it's so true. And I've been in business all my life. You know, my day job has been as a manager in big corporations. Mm. And it was just stupid of me not to think of it that way. Being a published author is being part of a business. You're, you know, a member of a team that's publishing a book. And, you know, you've got to understand, you know, your role and the roles of all the other people in that team so that you can do the right things.
Mm, absolutely. Well, there's a big question coming out from what you were just talking about, and that is, you know, that you were finding out what publishers want. So everyone wants to know now. So what do publishers want from authors? Apart from, we'll assume that a decent book is an important part of it, but what else do they want?
Hmm. Okay, that's a good one.
And I mean, you can, you know, in terms of you've already been doing this stuff, you know.
Okay, well, the kind of thing I understood was how the business process of a publisher works, where their inputs are coming from, how they're handling the material, and you know, what steps it has to go through in order to get to be a book. For example, I hadn't really understood about who is reading slush. You know, I hope your listeners know this kind of term. Like, slush is the unsolicited manuscripts that are going into publishers and agents. I hadn't really understood the role of an agent. Agents these days are the first line filter for the slush that's coming through before it gets to the big publishers. Small publishers don't have quite that same privilege. They have to deal with their own slush. But the big publishers now insist that it comes in via agents. So they've sort of pushed the slush or a lot of it out of their office into somebody else's. They're dealing with tons of this stuff, tons and tons of manuscripts every day. They need a very fast way of getting it through their process. They need to be able to look at it, size it up, make a decision in minutes rather than weeks or months or however long it actually takes them, because most of that's just queuing in various stages of the process. What they're doing in the when they read your query letter or glance at your manuscript is they're trying to make a decision very, very quickly. So you've got to do all you can to help them make that decision. Say the right thing, say it concisely, give them all the right triggers so that they can make the decision to find out more, which is what they do. They ask for a partial after they've seen your query. That's the first hurdle. Your partial has got to show them that you know how to write, that you know how to format a manuscript and so on and so on. Then they'll ask for the full novel. So all the way along the way, dealing with a fellow professional in a professional way, giving them just the information they need to help them do their job. Mm. Now, beyond the agent, there's the selling to the publishers, whatever you can do to help in that process. I haven't yet learned. but once the publisher's got it, then you're actually talking about an editor or some fairly lowly, actually, person in the publisher, like an intern, who is looking at your manuscript on the basis of having been sent it by an agent. And they are trying to make a decision whether to put that up to a commissioning agent, a commissioning editor, who will then, you know, because they're more important, have less time, they're looking for this intern or whoever to support your book. So you've got to be thinking in terms of how this book is going to be presented internally in the publisher. You've got to give them the hooks. You've got to give them the, you know, the brief synopsis that's going to be able to describe the book in six or seven glorious sentences that are just so compelling that everybody has got to read this thing. Mm. And help it get through the internal meetings where marketing and publicity and all these other departments have got to be convinced that this is a book that is actually going to make money for the publisher. Mm. You know, the fact that it's a great quality book is a help, but it's got to have a lot of other properties like saleability in particular markets, and you've got to be with the right agent, with the right publisher at the right time to make that actually that formula work, and that's just pure luck. You can't do anything about that. But once you get past, you know, being lucky, you've really got to have marketing materials in the publisher for them to do internal selling to other departments. Mm. It's, you know, once you understand this process, it's sort of obvious that this is how publishers work, and you know it couldn't really be any other way. But for some reason, I was completely blind to this beforehand.
Wow. Well, I think people are probably learning a lot from that. But one of the things I noticed on your blog is that you've recently celebrated 2 years of your of your blog, and that also coincides with when you went on that that competition, right? So, so why did you start a blog, and why is it so important, and what benefits have you gained from blogging?
Well, I'd had a blog since the year dot. I mean, I've been on the web since the early 90s in various ways, but it wasn't until I was at that retreat and a writer stood up and said, "You've all got to have a writing blog because," and listed some reasons, like it's a way for people, for your audiences to find out who you are and what you're doing. It's a way for you to showcase your work and so on and so on. It's, you know, describing it as a marketing tool. Then I suddenly thought, well, yes, obviously an author does need a blog because people are going to want to know who you are and what you're doing. I mean, when you get in touch with an agent, when you get in touch with a publisher, when a reader stumbles across something you've done, they're going to want somewhere to go where they can see who you are and what you're doing. And it's got to, you know, be something that carries your brand in the jargon. Mm. It's got to be something that says who you are. It's got to be something that presents an image of yourself to the world that is accurate, but which is also, you know, clear and professional and is about you being part of this publishing business and delivering the goods to readers as well as to publishers. So, it was obvious at that moment. And I started it during the retreat. I actually, you know, went back to my room that night and set up my first blog, as writer blog. So, yes, it coincides exactly with that.
Mm. And it's, you know, you've been posting the results of your, well, you've been doing promotion for Time Splash, you know, recently. Yeah. So maybe you can talk a bit about that and what has been most successful with some of the things you've been doing, because you've literally tried so many different things.
Well, yes, it's interesting. It's really hard to say what works and what doesn't work. if you look around the blogosphere, there is so much advice, and I suspect that, you know, most of it is probably quite good, but most of it's based on hunches and experience rather than on hard data. Certainly when you start doing it yourself, you find the feedback loop is not exactly tight. What do I mean by that? My publisher sends me a statement at the end of the month. So even the data for their own online shop is a month in arrears, or monthly in arrears. The Amazon data that they get, which they then pass on to me, is another month older than that. So they're reporting the month before last. You know, I've only the book only came out in February, so I've only had like a couple of months of this already. But it's very clear that while I've got things going on a daily or weekly basis, trying to publicize the book, the actual data I'm getting back from the publisher is on a monthly basis. Sometimes some of the outlets are on a quarterly basis, and they're in arrears, sometimes 2 months in arrears, sometimes a whole quarter, so half a year in arrears. And you just can't tie the two together. So I do things like I look at my own blog and the website traffic to see whether I'm getting spikes at particular times for things I've done. And you can get some feel there. But the other thing you can look at is things like your Amazon rank, which drives me insane. I mean, Amazon rank is so volatile. It's up and down all the time within a huge range, at least mine is, that you really, it depends on the time of day, how well you're doing. I always find I'm doing much better in the morning than in the afternoon, because in the morning I've got all the Americans have been buying overnight, whereas in the daytime I've got all the Australians who are not buying at all, apparently.
No. There's only five of us have a Kindle.
That's right. Yes, ebook reading is so far behind here in Australia.
Oh, I know.
Everybody's
it's shocking.
Out and buying a Kindle right now.
But no, it's interesting. But you know, talking about where you live a long way, pretty much a long way away from anywhere.
Yes.
And you know, let's face it, you and I are in Australia. So you know, when I talk about the success of marketing, have you been doing 100% online marketing, or have you actually done any physical, in, you know, bookstore type stuff?
No, I've done it all entirely online. Bookstores are an interesting thing, because my book is an ebook. It doesn't have a paper incarnation at all. There's absolutely no interest from bookshops in what I'm doing.
Good
they
point.
Can't sell it. Why should they bother to have me sitting there signing whatever I'd sign?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's I tried something else. And instead of a sort of book launch with bookstores and signings, I did my 24-hour around-the-world non-stop Twitter tour. And that was great. I mean, it was actually good for feedback as well, because people actually tweeted me on the tour, on the round the world during that 24 hours, to say they'd bought the book, and you know, they were reading it while the tour was happening. And you know, I was getting instant gratification. There was one guy bought the book, read it, and had written a review before my 24 hours was over.
That's brilliant. And he hadn't heard about you before, or he was already a fan, or
absolutely. He lives in Alaska, and I just happened to be in Alaska on my tour and shouted out to Alaskans, and he responded, went and bought the book and read it, which was great. You don't get that kind of feedback on anything else, though, I'm afraid.
No.
I did a telephone talk-in or something.
That's brilliant. And you also did a blog tour, didn't you? How did that go?
That's just finished. That was pretty good. Basically, I just, in preparation for the launch of the book, I'd built up a Twitter following. I went from absolutely zero, I wasn't using Twitter at all, to about 500 odd people before it started, before the book launch. And it's now, my following's about 1,000, I think. So it builds up fairly quickly if you want it to. But I needed to build up a Twitter following, I thought, because I wanted to make an announcement and I needed people out there to announce to. Mm. So when I did, I also asked for people who would volunteer to host me for a blog tour. And I got, you know, a couple of dozen people, and that was very good. So I sort of scheduled a couple of stops a week for the next 2 months and asked people what they'd like me to do. And took it from there. Some people had very strong ideas about what I should say on their sites because, you know, they actually manage their sites seriously and, you know, they target particular audiences and they have a strong message and that kind of thing. Mm. You're one of them, of course. You asked me to do a particular thing and that was good. Mm. A lot of people just said, well, just do what you like. You know, mm. There were people who were less serious bloggers. But it gave me a lot of opportunity to do more exciting and interesting things like, you know, comedy things and to publish a story and so on, that kind of thing. So I tried to write the pieces and do the interviews well ahead of the scheduled time, which turned out to be a very good thing to have done because where I had to like produce three pieces in a week, as well as everything else I was doing, it started to feel a bit rushed. Mm. Whereas if you had everything, you know, 4 weeks in advance done and dusted, then that was a much nicer feeling and you'd actually been able to work on the piece and give it some proper attention.
Mm. So I guess, you know, a lot of people have that question, well, you know, how much time do I spend writing? How much time do I spend doing this, you know, publicising myself? Do you have an opinion on that or how do you balance your time?
Well, I think I had a fairly old-fashioned notion of how books sell these days. Because my book's electronic, because it's all being sold online, I don't have this period where my book is on the bookshelves and by God it's got to sell within those, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks or that's it, no one will ever buy it. The kind of thing you have with traditionally published paper books. When you're online selling, you actually have leisure. You can sell over a period of years at a steady rate rather than sell as much as you possibly can in the first few weeks. However, I went into it with that, my God, I've got to sell as much as I can in the first few weeks mindset and just dedicated all my time in probably the first month after the launch and probably the first few weeks before to publicity and, you know, the blog tour, the Twitter for various websites, a website for the book, and I built a blog for the book, as well as my writing blog. Okay, there's the Twitter. And just put a lot of effort into it and spent nearly all my time doing nothing but publicity. Eventually I realized I was just being crazy, that I was in the wrong business model. I should be looking for a good term. Kind of publicity, and I'm still pondering exactly how I do that, because what you need is to, instead of create a big blast of publicity and sell as many as you can quickly, you need to build up some kind of steady stream of publicity so that the awareness of Time Splash, my book, is there for people to discover all the time. And I haven't quite worked out how to do that yet, but that's the way I'm thinking at the moment. Because I think with an electronic medium for sales, you're talking about the possibility of a steady level, but substantial level of sale for a very long period. And I think that's probably a much nicer and certainly more relaxing kind of way to view selling your book.
And that's for people who haven't heard of him, Joe Conrath, Conrath with a K, talks about that. Are you a fan of his blog? Do you read his blog?
I read everything he writes.
Yeah, me too.
All the time. I think God, this guy's so brilliant. On the ball.
Yeah, he is brilliant. And I'll put the links on the podcast show notes for his blog. But he very much is an advocate of putting all your backlist on the Kindle and, you know, sort of making sure you have that sort of one ebook will sell another ebook, basically. So, and also I was going to say about your website, your writing website has a picture of Time Splash on the sidebar, which means that anyone who comes to your site to read an article sees that there. So that is another way of constantly getting traffic.
Absolutely. My blog traffic isn't huge. I get about 1,000 readers a month, which for me it seems huge, but I know it's not huge.
It must be growing, though. It must be growing.
It is growing fairly steadily.
Mm, exactly.
But I think, you know, everybody who comes, that should be up above the fold, as they say. It should be there to be seen. And I also have a little panel saying how to buy my book, which links to some of the shops, some of the online shops. And right at the top is the publisher's website, because the channel you use for the sale actually affects the size of the royalty I get enormously. Because I'm being paid on the net of the sale. If you buy it from the publisher, I get the full royalty, which is about 40% on an ebook. And if you buy it from another online, they take their 65% first, and then I get 40% of what's left. So it makes a huge difference. To me, it's four times better to buy it from my publisher than to buy it from Amazon. Which is a shame, because Amazon gets an awful lot more traffic.
Yes, this is the thing, isn't it? Okay, right, we're out of time. So where can people find you and Time Splash online?
Right, well, the book has its own website and blog. If you type timesplash.co.uk into the browser, you'll find it. That's timesplash, all as one word, .co.uk. I've also got a writing blog, which is grahamstores.cantalibre.com. I won't even spell that for you. And if you didn't have a pen handy, just type my name into Google, which is Graham Stores, S-T-O-R-R-S. And thankfully, I come up on the first page.
And you're also on Twitter?
Yes. Gray Wave.
Yes.
That's my Twitter name.
It's funny, isn't it? You get to know people by their Twitter handle.
Absolutely.
Instead of their name. And for anyone who's not on Twitter yet, that's really important. You know, make sure you choose a good name, because you are stuck with it. Yeah. Okay. Well, look, there was lots in that. I really enjoyed talking to you. It's fantastic. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. And thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time!